Hello and welcome to the session. My name is Amruta Haldankar. And first of all, if you are viewing this particular session, let me congratulate you for successfully overcoming the COVID-19 three waves. This particular session is as of January 2022. The reason I'm saying this is so that you can relate to the information which is as fresh as 2022. So we all have already experienced and know that COVID-19 has affected and impacted almost all aspects of our lives. So obviously COVID-19 has also impacted lots of industries, and tourism is one of the industry which is massive, not only with respect to its financial GDP for the globe, but also with regards to the percentage of the employment that it gives. So obviously COVID-19 and its effect and impact on tourism, especially international tourism, is worth to be studied. Now the reason why we want to study this is because there will be some impacts and effects of COVID-19 not only on the present status of international tourism, but also on the future of the entire tourism industry, the way it is going to work, what changes are going to be expected, and what are the policies and their formulations that we need to make sure that tourism or the international tourism market is as good or at least as better as it was. So let us see first the tourism facts and figures. Now we all know that travel and tourism accounted for 10% of global GDP. This was the fact before COVID-19 hit us. We have always recorded millions of jobs worldwide which are directly and indirectly related to travel and tourism. Now, while 25 million people took international travel in 1950, now 1950s is the era when the jet set happened, wherein the figure 25 million is obviously massive, but if you compare to what we had in 2019 is about 1.5 billion. Now, this were the figures in 2019. We all know that they decreased massively. Now, in 2 years, that is 2020 and 2021, when the COVID pandemic was at its high, obviously there were travel bans, travel restrictions, regulations, because of which people were not able to travel, and more importantly, were not necessarily wanting to travel. So obviously there was a fall in air traffic as well as the fall in international air travel or travelers, the number of travelers that traveled from one place to another. Now, the tourist arrivals fell by 65% in the first half of 2020. Now, according to IMF research, tourism receipts are not expected to reach pre-2019 levels by 2023. Now, we all know that by the time 2022 happened, although we have very positive numbers with respect to COVID-19 and people wish to travel, but the predictions are that there will not be many takers for international tourism. People are still not confident enough to take a trip, especially for leisure, to outside countries, right? So let's see what the tourism trends are and who will be feeling the maximum impact of COVID-19. Now, when we are talking about tourism or international tourism globally, there are some countries and some economies which rely almost completely on tourism. What it means is the revenue that they get has a massive outreach, or the revenue that comes is from tourism. Now, which are these countries? Especially the countries which are island nations, which are small nations, which have tourism as their major industry. So they have the resorts, they have businesses which are relying completely or indirectly on tourism. So white sand beaches of Caribbean, Seychelles, Mauritius and the Pacific. Okay, these are the ones, these are the places which are or were hustling into tourism. Obviously, COVID-19 impact has been felt by them maximum. There are also Southeast Asian countries like Thailand and Malaysia, All right, there are countries like Singapore which have also felt the heat of COVID-19 impact. The countries in African continent which thrives on the wildlife, which thrives on adventure tourism, okay, there are many safaris and many travel packages which were there in African continents and the nations in the African continent. All of these have been severely impacted. Now let's see what is the exact problem of this tourism dependent country. First of all, the shock of a tourism dependent economy is worse than what we could even imagine. Imagine a country like India, which is not completely dependent on tourism, but it is still impacted because overall economy has come down, right? Imagine the plight of the tourism countries wherein the economy itself relies on tourism, correct? So among African countries which are dependent on tourism, that will be shrinking to 12%. Those are the GDP percentage. Now among tourism dependent Caribbean nations, the decline will also reach 12%. Pacific Island nations such as Fiji could see GDP shrink by a staggering 21% in 2020. Now please understand, these were just predictions. The real scenarios might be, more worse. Now let's see the figure here which tells us the most vulnerable countries. Now the graph shows us some of the countries which have maximum share in their GDP is for tourism. So countries like Mexico, all right, which you can see, then there are countries like Spain, countries like France. So these are ideally countries which are supposedly the top scorers of tourism. All right, so the countries which have maximum percentage of tourism, all right, will be the most vulnerable countries. These are certain figures. So now we know the problem. COVID-19 has definitely impacted. Now, what are the solution? What is the solution? How do we cope up with this situation? How do we come up and mitigate the challenge that we have got? Now, every one of us, that is the countries, the organizations which are there in tourism, they all came up with their own solutions to do it. So everybody of us tried to manage this particular revenue gap that was there, not only just the economic losses, but also how to revive it. So let's take a few examples here. The first one that I can think of is about Barbados and Seychelles. Now, as mentioned earlier, these are island nations which are almost completely dependent on tourism. What they do first is, as soon as the COVID-19 situation was showing some relief, they immediately opened up their island for international tourists. Now, please understand, the reason why they did was, first of all, physically, such island nations are very, very small. Secondly, they have remote locations. So ideally, if we can say, or if we can proceed ahead and say that these are sort of tourist bubbles. What it means is that they are slightly safer than compared to other metropolitan cities or other tourist destinations, which are usually mass tourist favorite. Okay, so Barbados and Seychelles, or countries similar to such countries, what they did was reopened their island countries. Okay, now in spite of that, and please understand, when I talk about island nations, most of these island nations have resorts, okay, which are premium and luxuries. The prices or the price tags on these particular vacations are still on a higher side. So what it means is, it is not something which is something which goes ahead and attracts a tourist which is on a lower financial scale. So these are premium products. In spite of those, the prices had dropped. All right, they reduced these prices to almost half of it. All of this inclusive could not attract the tourist as much as it was. All right, so in August, what we can say was the arrivals were still down to 90%. So even when the islands were open, even when now they had evidences that they were safe, and even when the prices were almost halved, there were no takers for these islands and the vacations to it. Now, the IMF, that's International Monetary Fund, augmented its extended fund facility program. So obviously, this was international borrowing. So firstly, Barbados and Seychelles and some other countries usually predicted that we need XYZ amount of money. But very frankly, IMF did not give that kind of money, but they did give some kind of money, which is about $90 million, to help the fiscal deficit as a result, which was a result of plummeting revenues from tourism related activity. Now, when I talk about fiscal deficit, just a quick reference here, deficit is shortage. So when we talk about fiscal deficit of a country, what it means is we are talking about the total expenditure and total revenue. So for example, a country has a total expenditure of 200, but the country has total revenues of 100 rupees. It means it is short of 100 rupees to meet those expenditures. So that is what it roughly means by fiscal deficit. And this had majorly happened because of fall in tourism revenues. Now, this was one of the things that the countries came up, that is, ask for funding or borrow. There were other things also. Let's see the broad range of policy measures that came up. Now, there were various policy measures which came up in the world. Some policies were taken from industry, okay, their organizations, some other from international organizations like IATA. Some other policy measures were on a global, on a national level, which took place, on a regional level, which took place. Now, all over the world, most of the nations came up with different policies. Now, let's see one. All over the world, tourism-dependent economies are working to finance a broad range of policy measures. Now, these policies were aimed to soften the impact of COVID. Now, let me give you some examples. Now, in India, we had seen that there was a policy which came up of waiving off EMIs. Okay, if you remember, there was a time when government said, okay, let's not take EMIs right now. Let us take the EMIs later, because most of the people were jobless or were unpaid, right? So this was one of the policies. There were many Western countries which started giving cash to eligible citizens, all right? So this was some policies. There were other policies like tax relief. There were other policies like payroll support, loan guarantees which were given. There were few grants which were given, obviously, and other things also happened. So for example, there was a policy when especially related to tourism, that the aviation or the airline industry, okay, they started laying off people. Why? Because obviously airline has, you know, stopped its operation. There are no sales, there is no revenue. So how are the airline going to support the massive human resource that they have? So the policy came up by the government that you cannot lay off the employees. You know, what you can do is cut off their salaries and keep them on job. So some of the policies were taken positively, some of the policy measures were not taken so positively. All right, so there were lots of such policies happening in different countries, in different economies, and each one of us was trying to meet the challenge, to meet the crisis that we had. Now, some countries have focused support on informal workers, yes. Now, when we talk about tourism, massively we do have skilled workers, but over and above we have a maximum number of informal or unskilled laborers. We can talk about, you know, people who are in hospitality sector. We can talk about people who are housekeeping, who are, you know, working on the airport, the maintenance staff. All of these are people who were definitely affected by operations of tourism and tourism related activities going down. So these were the focus of many such policy measures. These were highly impacted, and these were the people who were most vulnerable section of our society. So there were many such policies which took place. Now, let us see some of the analysis which happened with respect to tourism industry and the impact of COVID-19. One such analysis was made by McKinsey and the company. Now, the consultancy firm, what it came up is analyze the stimulus packages. Now, when we say stimulus packages, this is the bailout package. Most of the government and the industry came up with solutions of bailout packages. So what it means is, suppose we are talking about India, we have an organization of travel agents or you know, airlines inside India. We talk with the government and we say we are we as an industry are massively hitting have hit the loss. All right, so you help us out, bail us out, you know, stop taxing us or give us a stimulus package. So this is what happened. And there were such stimulus packages across 24 economies, which totaled around $100 billion in direct aid to tourism industries. Now, when I say tourism industry, we are covering airlines, we are covering air cargo, we are covering travel agencies. All right, then this was something dollar $300 billion in aid across other sectors with significant involvement in tourism. So we are talking about also the indirect supply chain that is associated with tourism. Now, most direct stimulus was in the form of grants, debt relief, and aid to small and medium-sized enterprises. Now, when I talk about tourism industry, there is a massive percentage of medium to small-sized industries. These were the first one to put down their shutter, rather than the high top organizations related to tourism. Now, the firm recommends new ways to support the industry, including revenue sharing mechanisms among hotels and so on. Now, there was one more thing which happened. Everybody was coming up with their own version as to how to make more profits in the current scenario. So some of the things did work. So for example, there were many alliances which were broken and many alliances which actually took place. There was resorts and hotels and travel agencies and airlines which came up with some kind of business model by which the survival of each other would be possible, would be, you know, we actually survive this particular crisis. So there were many such things which came up. So I will be talking about some of the examples in the next slides. Now, let's see what was the development challenge. What was it that we were dealing with? According to WTO, that's World Tourism Organization, UNWTO, international tourist arrivals declined globally by 73% in 2020. That's a massive, massive number. Putting in jeopardy between 100 to 120 million direct tourism jobs. Now, please, let's take a scenario. Let's see what is happening. Right now, when I'm speaking with you, okay, before COVID, at any given moment on an average day, there were about 100 flights in mid-air. All right. So that was the kind of air traffic that we were dealing with. And of course, if that kind of air traffic is what is needed, we need those kind of human resources. So the decline of global international travelers or global tourism directly affected the jobs of millions, directly related to tourism activities. Now, this has led to collapse in exports of travel services and a decline in exports of transport services. Now, what do we mean by that? Obviously, we all know that tourism travel is an industry which we say is an export industry. What it means is the foreign exchange gets inside the country and the services are sold outside. So when I say I am talking about travel services, we are talking about resorts, we are talking about transport services. Here we are dealing with international air tickets. So air tickets are being sold to international travelers who are coming to my own country. So what it means is the revenues that I'm getting is considered to be an export revenue. All right, so this led to the collapse of that particular revenue. So obviously my foreign exchange in my in the country's treasury was affected. That is one of the challenges. Yes, the travel shock is the word that could be there. The travel shock is continuing in 2021 as the restrictions to international travel persist and there is substantial uncertainty on the nature and timing of tourism recovery. Now, let's see how this goes about. What is the uncertainty about? The uncertainty is based on various facts which are interrelated. So for example, if I am a person who wishes to travel now, everything is safe and I want to travel, I am uncertain. Why am I uncertain? Because the situation keeps changing drastically and fast. So I cannot make my long-term plans. There is no certainty that there will be any changes or in travel reservations or restrictions or policies. So it's uncertain. All right. More importantly, there is an uncertainty about taxations, about quarantine periods, whether there is supposed to be or not, about what vaccinations need to be there, what are the documentations that a traveler needs to be put forth. So there is a lot of uncertainty with respect to travelers. Now let's see the other part. The uncertainty is whether I as an airline company is going to sustain the next year coming. That's an uncertainty. Okay, we are hoping for the positive effects. So all of this combined together gives us still a very bleak picture with respect to tourism or travel. The crisis has crystallized the importance of tourism as a development pathway for many countries to decrease poverty and improve their economies. Now, like they say that every bad thing can have a positive thing that we can look upon. What happened here is when the nation started realize, when do we realize that a particular industry is that important to the economy? All right. So it's like the absence of tourism industry was felt by the economies worldwide. And that's when they understood, okay, so tourism industry is extremely important. The absence of it got felt. So what happened? The positive effect of this was that the country started taking tourism industry, aviation industry more seriously because of its impact, not only on the GDP on a national level, but also on the job market of that country. So this was one positive aspect that we can think about, and we can also assume that post-COVID era, the countries will be giving a more importance to industry like tourism. Now let's see what the future holds. What is it that we can expect? What are the predictions? The World Tourism and Travel Council has prepared a report on the future of the industry. Now it says travel will largely be kick-started by the less risk-averse travelers. Now we won't really require a report to come to that conclusion. Let's take an example. Suppose if I am, a couple in their 30s with two kids. All right. Am I going to plan a vacation right now with, COVID-19 still looming? There are lots of documentations. I'm not sure when I can take a vacation. Can I afford that kind of vacation? And more importantly, is it worth it? Is it worth having all of these things, having, I'm not very confident traveling with my two kids and my wife and husband, I, and going on this international trip. Is it all worth that? Okay, that's what I am thinking. Now let's take another scenario wherein there are old age couples. Okay, they are obviously somebody who are high risk with respect to COVID-19. Am I going to proceed ahead and look for, going on an international trip? Again, one more thing that I'm thinking about is the insurance premiums. Okay, if I want a rider on that, all right, if I want the COVID-19 risk to be covered in my insurance, in my travel insurance, I need to pay a higher price. So I'm thinking all this as just a normal traveler. So obviously, what we can see through is that the people who are going to now travel on an international trip are going to be somebody who are okay for taking that risk, who are accepting that there is a risk in traveling, but they still proceed ahead and travel. And more importantly, the ones who can actually afford to travel. Okay, because please understand, everybody on a majority have either seen some job transitions, have had some medical emergencies and had their funds slightly lower down. So they are on a budget. Most of them are on a budget. So clearly the travel will be largely kick-started by the less risk-averse travelers and early adopters. These were the adventure travelers or backpackers or surfers or mountain climbers. Now, in the end, the return of tourism will likely hinge on what will be a deeply personal decision for many people as they weigh the risk of falling ill against the necessity of travel. That's right. So when we are talking about leisure travel, it's not the need, okay? It's the want. It's a luxury, right? So I'm taking a vacation. I'm taking a leisure vacation because I want to do it, because I have time to do it, because I can afford to do it, because I want to. Basically, it's my passion to travel, all right? So it will be a very personal choice whether I wish to travel now, understanding all the risk involved, understanding all the risk, the documentations, the protocols which are involved. So am I looking ahead for traveling? Now, when we talk about protocols in COVID-19, what are the COVID-19 protocols? Now, I am very sure that you must have heard lots and lots of rules and regulations. Keep your mask up, all right? Have a social distancing. Apart from that, there has to be vaccination certificates. There has to be a PCR test, some tests which are allowed by some countries, the other ones which are not allowed. So first and foremost, what happened is I, as a traveler, am not comfortable with so many rules, so many restrictions, so many protocols. And more importantly, they are not uniform. They're different. So if I want to have a vacation to Singapore, I have to deal with a different set of rules. If I'm going to have a flight catch to USA, I have to follow different protocols. This is very taxing. This is very stressful for travelers. The fact is, people do not feel comfortable traveling. We have not put in the necessary protocols to give them that comfort. These are the words of one of the event. All right. So very true. The more important fact out of all of this is the confidence of the traveler. Now, in spite of all of this, okay, let's see, somebody guarantees me that if I'm going to wear a mask and travel, and everybody else is going to strictly follow those COVID-19 protocols, I, as a traveler, am confident and guaranteed that I'm not going to get COVID-19. I'm not going to be infected. Is that guarantee given? No, not really. In spite of following all COVID-19 protocols, there is a risk for that particular traveler to catch the infection, right? So the protocols, no matter how stringent they are, we are dealing with a virus here, okay? We are dealing with something which is not controllable that easily. So let's see the second point, which is here after 9/11. Okay, there were again few protocols, the security agencies which came up with. Now these protocols, these rules, these regulations were very strict. Okay, and they were uniform. There was a uniformity maintained and the travelers accepted those rules. The travelers accepted those regulations. The reason being, we as a traveler are confident that these protocols, these rules, these regulations will be strictly followed and they are going to help us. Okay, we have a guarantee that there is a security involved in whatever regulations and protocols that we are following. So over here, this is a psychological effect that the travelers had. Apart from being stressed out about the protocols, they lacked confidence on those protocols, that the protocols were enough to save them, to protect them from the infections. Now let's see adjusting to the new normal. New normal is the new word of the era, the new normal, all right? We all know what that means. It's normal for a five-year-old to have an online class. It's normal. It's normal for everybody to sit in the, in the same room of the house and work from home. It's the new normal. It's quite normal for me to order even the groceries from a shop. So that's a new normal, and we all are adjusting. Now, these were some examples relating to daily life, right? So there, such new normal trends existed even on an industry level, even on a national level. So as the immediate impact of the lockdowns and containment measures eased during the second half of 2020, countries started looking for a balance. That's when we started looking what will be normal, what is it that can be flexible, and how are we going to adjust to that. Thailand, Seychelles, and other countries approved programs that would admit tourists from lower risk countries with special quarantine requirements. Now, the words like quarantine became very used to, you know, people knew what is quarantine, what is self-isolation, what is sanitation. All of these words became normally used on an everyday term. Now, the countries like Thailand and Seychelles, which are majorly dependent on tourism, they were very keen to want the travelers to their country and, you know, start rolling the revenue. So what they did was they created a risk of, they created a list of low risk, high risk, such countries. Now, what was the basis of such list? Clearly, we all have gone through the news bulletin, which keeps saying, giving us the data as to number of COVID cases here, number of COVID cases there. Now, please understand this statistics was very, very important. It was, in fact, very crucial. Why? Because the policies, whether the skies are open to fly or not open to fly, dependent on these statistics. So based on the statistics, based on the number of COVID-19 patients, based on the deaths, based on the infection rate, there were certain lists of countries prepared. What are the regions which are low risk? What are the reasons, regions which are high risk? And there were also certain other things which came up, like you must all have come up with this word known as travel bubble or air travel corridors. Okay, so what were these? We will speak later. But currently, Thailand, Seychelles countries started opening up. Okay, they started giving leeway. So for example, earlier the quarantine might be paid. Now, in order to attract the travelers, they started giving a 7-day unpaid quarantine. Okay, so you can come to Thailand, there will be a 7-day quarantine free of charge, and then you can come for the vacation. These were certain policies, certain measures which were taken place. Now, let me come to that word that I dealt with about travel bubble. We all know that Australia, country like New Zealand was extremely strict measures were taken place. Okay, they went to complete lockdown. So what it means is nobody was allowed to enter Australia, nobody was allowed to leave Australia, nobody was allowed to enter New Zealand or vice versa. So these countries were very strict. Okay, they put forth strict rules about the way they dealt with COVID-19. Now, Australia created a travel bubble. What it means is Australia and New Zealand came together and said, okay, I'm going to allow my people to travel to your land and you allow your people to travel to my land. And like that, we will create a corridor which is safe. Okay, so the idea behind it was it becomes a safer zone. Now, it's hypothetic or what, but there is no evidence to prove that the travel bubbles actually worked. But yes, comparatively, they are more safer. That much can be done. So CARICOM countries have also created a regional travel bubble that eliminates testing, quarantine for people traveling from countries within the bubble. Now, let's see an example also on a national level. In India as well, you know, there were certain restrictions which were coming from state. So if I want to travel from one state to another, there were certain rules. Okay, and these rules depended on which state was having maximum number of COVID cases or were not having maximum number of COVID cases. So it all was the data game or the number game that we can come up. And these policies kept changing. All right, so the rules kept changing. Starting from adjusting to the new normal, now we were trying to recover. That's okay, we are adjusting to the new normal. But now is the time to actually recover and recover fast. Now, there were many different things that were tried by different countries worldwide. Some did work. Some worked for that particular country because of their own regional way of life probably, and some may not work universal. So for example, let's take remote work. All right, so there were many or almost everybody who was working remote. People had in lockdown changed their places of domicile. They were living somewhere else. They had their office somewhere else, and everybody was virtually working. There were virtual teams. Now, what countries like Barbados, Estonia, Georgia did was they provided package to these virtual teams. So what it was is that they made sure that they put forth something like, you can come with your entire team. There will be a particular hotel and all of you can live there. That was one kind of package which they gave. The other packages were, they enticed the foreign visitors to come and stay at Barbados, Estonia and Georgia. They made sure that there were all the facilities like, you know, Wi-Fi or other things which might be required for an actual setup, office setup. These were given. Now, such kind of things was also offered in country like India. I remember that there were many people who actually stayed over in hotels. Okay, this holds true for a lot of medical staff. So we all know that medical staff was working 24 hours a day, right, to deal with the COVID-19 situation. In that case, there was no chance for them to actually travel to and forth to their own places or their own houses. So what had been done at that time, this I'm talking about when COVID-19 was still there, all right, such staff had been given place to stay, and most of them were hotels nearby the places of their work where such staff was actually needed physically to be present for that work. All right, now this idea proceeded ahead at the time of recovery. So when COVID-19 started to fall, or you know, we were trying to adjust to new normal, some of the hotels came up with this brilliant plan of giving an entire room, okay, full-fledged AP plan, that is all meals inclusive plan, along with a stay at that particular resort or a hotel, okay. And all of this, when you are staying in that hotel, you're working, right? So there were many takers for that. Ideally, these were the takers who were, you know, young couples who were working, who had a crunch of space in their own home. So for example, there are people who say, you know, are staying in a 2 BHK. Everybody is working from home. Probably the missus is working. There is a kid who has his, you know, school classes. There is another kid who is having his college class. So it was difficult to manage. There was a space crunch, especially in metropolitan cities. So for example, there were many couples or many families who took this particular package by the hotels. So this worked on a you know, metropolitan level in India, I'm saying. So obviously in certain countries like Barbados, Estonia and Georgia, this did work. I may not say that it was a profitable venture, but I may say, proceed ahead and say that it did bring some revenue to almost vacant resorts and hotels. So there was some business which came up. Now, the next example that we can come up with is Japan. So Japan had seen massive numbers of international arrivals before COVID-19, which was 2013 and 2018. Japan was coming up and, you know, coming to be a very, very good competitor for China, which was at that time, you know, pioneer, which was at that time the top one in Southeast Asia, in Asian countries. So Japan showed very good international tourism business from 2013 to 2018. And later on, after the era after post-COVID, or we can say 2020, it started opening up, especially in the end of October. Okay, there were many countries which opened up. Japan was one of those countries which opened up for tourism. And in all of this, there were strict restrictions which were followed. There were strict protocols that were there. And only those countries especially were invited or were allowed by Japan, which were relatively low-risk countries. Thank you so much.